This is joint work with Thorsten Holz, Bradstone Gross, Christopher Krugel, and Giovanni Vigna. So, as you all know, spam is a big problem. Here is a spam email I received a few weeks ago. And this email testifies also how spam is getting sneaky. For instance, in the subject line of the email, the Telex anti-censorship system is mentioned, which is a paper which will be presented at USENIX later today. So, of course, while receiving this email, one thinks that it's from a fellow researcher who wants to share some thoughts about the paper. As it turns out, it was from some bot in Kazakhstan, and the recipe for fighting censorship was selling cheap Viagra. So this should have convinced you that tracking spam bots is important. If it didn't, well, think about it. Botnets are responsible for 85% of worldwide spam. So having a precise view of which IPs are infected by which malware is very useful. For instance, by having such view, ISPs and organizations could clean up their networks by knowing precisely which IPs are infected and which malware to look for. Also, it would be possible to improve existing blacklists, such as DNS blacklists, so that the end host would receive less spam. And as well, mitigation efforts such as large-scale botnet takedowns could be directed to those botnets that prove to be most aggressive or largest. Also, tracking spam bots is challenging. For instance, the IP addresses of infected machines change all the time. Most infected machines are on DSL lines or dial-up lines. And therefore, we cannot rely on a certain IP address as being infected at any point in time. Also, it is fairly easy to recruit new members into a botnet. As we showed in our lead paper earlier this year, the population of a Catwell botnet changed all the time during the lifetime of this botnet. Therefore, even if we were able to enumerate all the infected IPs during a certain day, this wouldn't help us much a week later because the IPs would have changed quite a lot. An approach to track spam bots is to set up spam traps. Spam traps are a set of email addresses which do not correspond to real customers, but are spread throughout the internet with a solely purpose of being reached by spam. And this is quite effective. However, there are a few limitations. For instance, by setting up a spam trap, only a subset of the bots belonging to a botnet will send emails to it. In particular, those bots that will receive in their email lists addresses belonging to the spam trap. And also, some botnets target only users located in certain countries, for instance, for localized spam in languages different than English. Therefore, even if we set up a spam trap in the US, we would miss a lot of spam directed to users in Spanish-speaking countries, for example. So the basic insight of our approach is that bots that belong to the same botnet will share similarities. Of course, they will share the same code base, and so they will have a similar behavior. And also, if they will be used by the same people to spam, they will receive the same spam templates to spread and the same email list to send their emails to. This means that we wouldn't necessarily identify a botnet as a single entity, but commoditized botnets, which are botnets that get rented by people, could be identified as different ones since they will spam different stuff and they will get different email lists. But this is okay for our approach. So we claim that by observing a portion of a botnet, it is possible to identify more bots that belong to it. In a nutshell, our approach works as follows. We have a small set of IPs that we know for sure belong to a certain botnet. We take this set and we go to a larger data set where we can see a lot of email transactions. And we study how these bots behaved during that period in their email behavior. For instance, we mark which destinations they targeted. This will be clear later. After doing this, we look at the behavior of all the other IPs in this set. Of course, some of them will show a very different behavior, but some of them will show the same behavior. And we will consider this set as being a growing set of the original one. And therefore, we will consider all these IPs all together as our new view of the botnet. And this will enable us to have a broader knowledge of a botnet than the one we had at the beginning. Now, the question is, how can we achieve this? Well, for our approach, we need two data sets. The first data set is a set of IP addresses that belong to known spamming bots, and we will group them by spam campaigns. We call these seed pools in the paper. And the second set is a log of email transactions that have been carried out on the internet. These email transactions will be both legitimate and malicious, and we call this transaction log. Of course, if we had a view of all the possible emails sent out on the internet, we could detect all the bots in the wild. Unfortunately, we cannot achieve this, so in our system, we had a very narrow view on the internet. As we will see, this affected our results as well. We implemented our approach in a tool called Bot Magnifier. And to populate seed pools, we used a large spam trap. And I will describe this in detail later. And as a transaction log, we use the logs of a SpamMouse mirror. SMTP servers from all over the world use SpamMouse to know if a certain sender is known to be a spammer or not. Therefore, we can consider each query to a SpamMouse mirror as a record of an email being sent at a certain point in time from a certain IP to a certain server. In the paper, we also show how Bot Magnifier is not restricted to use these two data sets, but it also works while using other data sets as long as they share the same characteristics. So our system is executed periodically. We give it as an input a set of seed pools. And at the end of each observation period, it outputs the IP address of a bot in the magnified pools. Oh, I forgot to say the magnified pools are the sets of grown IPs that we identify at the end of any observation period. And when possible, the system also flags those pools as with the name of a botnet that carried them out. So let's dig into the phases Bot Magnifier goes through. The first phase is to build the seed pools. As I said, a seed pool is a set of IP addresses that participated in a specific spam campaign. So we built them using the data from a spam trap set up by a large US ISP. We logged on average 1 million messages per day. And we consider messages with similar subject lines as part of the same campaign. For instance, we developed some techniques to mitigate evasion attempts. For example, if we see the email address of the recipient in the subject line, we substitute it with a regular expression, and also we substitute numbers with regular expressions. These simple techniques seem to work well for our data set. If bots would become more evasive in future, we could leverage previous work such as Botnet Judo for this particular step. We had to make some design decisions. For instance, we found out that while using very small seed pools, we weren't able to get good results for our magnification. This means that we had too many false positives, too many real SMTP servers were marked as bots. And so we set the minimum size of the seed pools for our system as to 1,000. And also, in order to get enough campaigns to reach this threshold, we set the observation period to 1 day. Of course, these design decisions had some bad effects on the number of campaigns we were able to track, but not too much. We were still able to track 85% of the campaigns we observed in the spam trap. The second phase is characterizing the bot behavior. As I said, we take the seed pools and we query the transaction log looking for all the events that these seed pools were responsible for during that observation period. In particular, we analyze the set of destinations that get targeted by the IPs in the seed pool and build a target set. The problem here is that, of course, the target sets of two botnets will substantially overlap. For instance, any botnet in the world will target domains such as Gmail or Hotmail. To overcome this, we also extract a set of destinations that are unique for each seed pool, and we call this characterizing set. The third phase is the heart of our system. It's called bot magnification. And the goal of this phase is to find the IP addresses of previously unknown bots. So bot magnifier considers an IP address as behaving similar to the bots in the seed pool if three conditions are met. The first one is that IP address sent emails to at least N destinations in the target set. The second one is if it never sent an email to any destination outside of this set as soon as an IP address contacts a destination which is not in the target set, we discard it, and this gets rid of most legitimate SMTP servers. And also we want a bot candidate to have contacted at least one destination in the characterizing set. By doing this, we are able to univocally identify as, that IP as belonging to a certain botnet, so as carrying out a certain campaign. The question now is, how large should N be? For instance, if we picked N too large, we wouldn't get good results, we wouldn't magnify our pools by a lot. And also, if N would be too low, we would have too many false positives. Also, intuitively, N should be greater for campaigns that target a larger number of destinations. If you think about it, a campaign that targets the whole internet would have been a higher chance to be matched by random mail servers, whereas a campaign that targets a very small number of destinations is more recognizable. Therefore, we came up with this formula. We consider N as a function of TPI, which is the size of a destination set, and we have a parameter K. To develop, to calculate how large K should be, we executed a precision versus recall analysis on 10 campaigns for which we had ground truth. These were coming from the Catwell botnet. We had access to some command and control servers, so we knew which bots belonged to the botnet at that point in time. Turns out that K is not perfectly linear. For instance, it increases quite fast while for small destination sets, and it stays kind of steady as the destination set size grows. And these are how we dimensionated the parameters to obtain optimal results. It is actually not very important to get optimal results, optimal parameters for this particular formula. If we don't pick optimal parameters, typically recall decreases, but we still have low false positives. The last phase of our system is spam attribution. As I said, we want to label spam campaigns based on the botnet that carried them out. To do this, we applied two approaches. The first one is to run malware samples. We ran spam bots in two different locations in the US and in Europe to cover as many campaigns as possible. And we sinkholed the email traffic of these bots. And anytime a bot sent an email that matched one in our spam trap, we considered that campaign as being carried out by the particular botnet. Of course, it was impossible for us to run all the possible spamming bots. And also, we are not sure that we were able to observe all the campaigns that had been carried out by a certain botnet at the time. Therefore, we developed some more advanced techniques and to cluster these botnet pools together. For instance, the first technique is IP overlap. If two campaigns overlap by a consistent amount in the bots that carry this campaign out, it is very likely that they are the same botnet. The second technique is the destination distance. We observed that typically botnets tend to target specific countries at specific points in time. Therefore, we can model the distribution of the destinations they target as a vector of countries. And then for each two botnet pools, we calculate cosine distance between these two vectors. And if this distance is very low, we consider them as being the same botnet. As well, similarly, we calculate the bot distance. We observe that different botnets have quite a different country distribution over bots. And so we can apply the same technique to the bots, to the bots country distribution. If you're interested in how we develop the thresholds for these features and how we evaluated them, the details are in the paper. So to validate our approach, we studied the Catwell botnet, for which we had direct data. We had access to about 30% of the command and control servers, and so we knew which IP addresses were infected. We ran this validation experiment for the period between July 28 and August 16, 2010. And for each day of the analysis, we selected a subset of the IP addresses referenced by the CNC servers. Then, with the help of a spam trap, we identified the campaigns that had been carried out during that period by those IP, and we applied our system as I described before. During this period, Bot Magnifier identified 144,000 IP addresses belonging to this botnet, and of these, over 33,000 were actually listed in the CNC database, which is almost 23% of our results. There is a gap between the 30% of the botnet we were controlling and the 23% we actually detected. This is due to the fact, as I was saying before, that we had a very narrow view on what was going on the internet. We think that by using a more comprehensive data set, this result would have been better. Then we ran our system in the wild to identify botnets from September 28, 2010 to February 5, 2011. And Bot Magnifier tracked over 2 million bot IP addresses. And of these, 925,000 belong to the to Magnifier pools, while the others belong to seed pools. This means that even with a very narrow view we had, we were still able to double our knowledge about these botnets during this period. We then ran some false positives checks. For instance, we tried to connect to all the IPs we flagged to port 25, and we considered as a false positive any server that replied. We considered it as a legitimate server. And we also looked up DNS names for these IPs, and we considered as false positives any IP that had a host name, such as mail or SMTP. This false positive ratio could appear high at first, but by applying the techniques I described, we could get rid of all these false positives as a post filter. As you can see, we were able to track five of the largest botnets that were out at the time. You can see the total number of IP addresses we flagged, as well as what we call static IP addresses, which are IP addresses that occurred more than once during our analysis. Of course, these IPs we are way more confident in saying that they were actually members of the botnet at that point in time. Here is the CDF of our results. We were able to track important events in the lifetime of these botnets. For example, in December 2010, the MegaD botmaster got arrested. And as you can see, the activity from that botnet pretty much died afterwards. Also, we were able to detect the resurrection of a Waledak botnet at the end of last year. And as well, the Rostock botnet was kind of silent for during December 2010 and came back early this year. And as you can see, after that period, we observed a steady growth in the IPs belonging to the botnet. Now, we showed that we can track spam bots and have an idea of what bot populations are. But the question now is, can Bot Magnifier improve existing blacklists? So can it be used actually for spam prevention? To answer this question, we analyzed the logs from our CS mail server between November 2010 and February 2011. Our mail server has a quite typical setup, which helps us in this analysis. For instance, they use Spamhaus as a pre-filter. So any email which is, any sender which is flagged as Spamhaus is blacklisted right away. And then for the emails that reach our server, they use content analysis with spam assessing to see that the actual content is spam or not. This means that if an email got delivered to our server at any point in time, that IP was not blacklisted by Spamhaus at that time. Also, the spam ratios computed by spam assessing give us some sort of ground truth on whether our system is actually marking spam bots or not. So during this period, our server received 28,000 emails as spam, and over 10,000 IPs were involved in this. And of these, 295 IPs were detected by Bot Magnifier at a point in time earlier than the actual email delivery. and this accounted for a total of over 1,200 emails, which is about 4% of the results. This could look a bit underwhelming, but one of the problems is that our observation period was of 1 day, and so we happened to flag as spammers way more IPs than these, around 10%, but the emails were actually delivered before the observation period was over. And also, as I said, the narrow view we had on the internet didn't help. We then looked for false positives, and we looked at those IPs that sent emails to our system and did not get flagged by spam assessing. And 12 of them were detected as bots by our system. However, by using the filtering techniques I described before, we would have been able to filter them out. Interestingly, we also detected one false negative by spam assassin. It was an email that was not detected as spam, but we found records in another blacklist of that IP being involved in botnet activity. As I said, our system is independent on the data stream we used. To show this, we use NetFlow logs from NISP backbone router. And these NetFlow logs are sampled, so we only had 1.9 million emails logged per day. Of course, we had to retrain the system and come up with different parameters to currently dimension n. And we ran this experiment for a week between January 20 and January 28, 2011. During this period, Bot Magnifier identified over 30,000 IPs in Magnified pool, and this grew the seed pools by 38%. If you're interested in the breakdown of these IPs in the different botnets, the details are in the paper. To conclude, we presented Bot Magnifier, which is a tool for tracking and analyzing spamming botnets. And we showed that our approach is able to accurately identify and track botnets. In the future, by using more comprehensive data sets, the magnification results would get better, and we also would be able to develop new features to characterize the behavior of botnets that would make our approach more resilient to evasion. So thanks, and I'm open to questions.
I had a couple questions on. First, you want to decide whether a given sender belongs to a particular botnet based on where it's sending. And one of the rules in the paper is they can't have sent to any address that's not part of the seed pool. Do I have that right?
No, the seed pool is the set of IP addresses that we use to train our system. So we look at the seed pool and we look at the destinations that the seed pools targeted.
Right.
And this is the set that we want.
Right.
To,
yeah. So one of the rules in the paper is a bot must not have sent to an address that's not one of the ones the seed pool sent.
Yeah, correct.
To. And I just don't get that, because I would think that, you know, depending how the address list is partitioned among the bots in a botnet, they certainly might send to some unique destinations. Why would you assume that sending someplace that's not among those targets means you're not part of the botnet?
Yeah, that's a good question. Actually, we consider that we could miss some bots that wouldn't send destinations in the character in the target set we developed. But we also think that by doing this analysis over time, these bots will be included in our magnified sets at some point.
You're saying that also, you'll eventually see the entire target list among the seeds? I still don't quite get it. I mean, if bots send somewhat to unique destinations, if 1 in 1,000 of where they send to is unique, then I just don't see how this works.
This is discussed also in our resilience to evasion session in the paper. So how we could solve this would be to make our techniques less strict, so to allow a certain amount of destinations to not to be in the destination set.
Okay, so basically this consideration is for future work, is that?
Yeah.
Okay, and then the other thing I wanted to ask is about validation, which is you have the 30% of cut whale servers.
Mm-hmm.
And the part I didn't know is that for some botnets, the bots will rotate, or, you know, they're not tied to a particular server necessarily.
That is correct.
So it's possible in the 30% you see all of them. Or it's possible you really only see 30% if they are tied to particular servers.
So how the Cattle botnet works is that they pick a CNC server at boot time, and then they keep the same.
Okay, so you structurally confirm that in this case they are tied to the server, so you can extrapolate up from that.
I mean, do they pick
uniformly among the servers, essentially?
Sorry?
Do they essentially pick uniformly among the servers?
So our analysis showed that pretty much all the servers we had access to were controlling the same number of bots at any point in time.
Great, thanks.
I just have a very similar question. Did you actually try dropping that criteria for the IP being excluded if it contacted some address outside of the target set? Did you try dropping that and see if you get all the 30% out of those bots that you had in the ground truth?
No, we didn't try that.
Okay, thanks.